Off the Ball.
GAA. You know, we can all say, oh yeah, maybe the Armaghs or the Curries won, it'll be gone. The Donegals, the Galways, but anyone can beat anyone in this new world we live in.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The News Round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50 milligram film coated tablets.
Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
The News Round on Off the Ball. This is News Talk.
Good evening and welcome along to Monday Night's Off the Ball. It's Owen here with you until 10 o'clock this evening. And coming up, we've got Monday Night Rugby coming your way from 7:30 because Leo Cullen has announced today that he will be stepping down as head coach of Leinster Rugby at the end of next season. Matt Williams will be with us to discuss that news today. From 8pm, we've got Eamon McGee with us. We've got Darren O'Sullivan with us. They'll be talking about another dramatic weekend in the All-Ireland Football Championship and, of course, looking ahead to the weekend's quarter-finals in the football, of course. No Donegal, no Armagh. We knew there was going to be one heavyweight casualty after the weekend's action, but Donegal getting dumped out yesterday at headquarters. One of the shocks of the season so far. Also tonight, from 9 o'clock, as always, the football show is coming your way and Tim Vickery will be with us to discuss. It'll be great timing for our South American expert to join us because Lionel Messi is now officially the World Cup record goal scorer after netting his 17th goal in the competition, his fourth in this tournament in the last half an hour or so. Our number is 087-9180-180 if you want to send us a WhatsApp message. Stephen Doyle will be bringing you the news round very shortly. Steve, how are you doing?
I'm all good, but I'll tell you one thing, that Messi fella couldn't kick a penalty to save his life.
He certainly couldn't. Brutal. Arthur O'Dea is also with us. Arthur, how are you doing?
Flying.
So the Miroslav Klose era is officially over. He is no longer the answer to the quiz question, who is the top scorer in World Cup history. He's no longer the joint top scorer in World Cup history because Lionel Messi, after a couple of bites at the cherry this evening, as Steve has alluded to, has grabbed his 17th goal in the competition. The truth is that he could have had a hat-trick before scoring tonight, but his goal did officially come. We'll talk about the missed penalty in just a moment, but I think it would be wrong of us to not start with the actual goal. And I think what we've learned from this moment is that the most important thing about playing with Lionel Messi is just knowing where he is on the pitch at all times. So the official assist goes down as an assist by Facundo Medina, the fullback for Argentina. But the real assist is Thiago Almada. He comes through the middle, he plays the ball out to Medina, and then he just takes a little look over his right shoulder. He sees Messi is arriving into the box a little bit later than he is and just lets the ball roll between his legs. It falls to Messi's feet and he does the rest of the business pretty calmly, slotting past the Austrian goalkeeper to put Argentina 1-0 up. And it's not going to be a record that's going to last for longer than 4 years, you'd suspect. Mbappe's going to take it back off him at the next tournament, you'd imagine. Mbappe might take it off him tonight. Who knows what sort of demolition he might do.
But the Iraqis might have something to say about that.
Well, not their manager, who's basically said, we're lucky to be on the same pitches as these guys. But it is a pretty wonderful moment. And he looks like he's moving pretty well out there, Lionel Messi. Like from the first game to tonight, I don't think the athleticism is going to be much of an issue throughout the early stages of this tournament.
But he's standing a lot, isn't he? He is doing a lot of standing.
He is not.
And listen.
Is he tonight, though?
I don't want to sound like I'm I don't want to sound being critical of or, you know, trying to take down Messi as he breaks the World Cup record, because it's absolutely deserved. And it's much better having Lionel Messi holding that record than Miroslav Klose.
What have you got against Klose?
With all due respect to Miroslav Klose.
He's one of the World Cup's greatest goal scorers.
World Cup winner.
Miroslav Klose, big, lanky centre forward. Messi, the greatest player of all time, you know, is definitely a better holder of that title. But look, when you watch the goal back, like, what were Austria thinking? Like, they just let him standing there in about 5 yards of space and just let him drift in. First touch. It was a brilliant goal. It was a first touch finish from about 10 yards. Absolutely great stuff. But you're watching the game and, you know, it's no surprise. It was the same at the last World Cup. He's not doing a lot of running. You know, he's just kind of occupying spaces where he kind of finds space and where he can be picked out, given the ball and given a chance to score. He's making the odd little burst of sprints throughout that first half, but like, I think the key thing is that, and it's no surprise, like, the guy is, he's an old man now, you know, so I'm not surprised that he's not doing as much running as he would have done earlier in his career. It's just about getting him on the ball when you can and let him. As Joey Endo once said about Colin Whelan for UCD, wasn't he, playing Sligo's? Give him the ball and let him do the magic.
Yeah. And he's had plenty of the ball in that first half. The penalty comes after about a dozen minutes of the game. Debatable enough penalty after watching it a few times. I thought in the first replay of VAR it was stonewall, but actually they're the conspiracy theorists who think that FIFA are out to hand this record to Messi might have something after that.
Do you want the penalty stats? He was joint with Harry Kane as the most penalties taken at a World Cup, not including shootouts.
Now he's gone one ahead.
Taken six penalties each. Messi's now taken seven and he's missed
three.
Very good.
And yeah, well, that's an important fact in, you know, the historical statistic here, which we might discuss in a moment. But just on the penalty, the Austria goalkeeper with a brilliant piece of mind games, which probably had no impact on it whatsoever, given Messi just kicked the ball wide. It wasn't actually saved by the Austria goalkeeper, but he was kind of staring him down, pointing at his chest, shouting something at Lionel Messi. I'm not sure was it in a language that Messi understood.
Can I have your shirt?
Yeah. Please let me get in on the action.
Full time, can I have your shirt?
And Messi just put it wide. He had two great chances after that as well. And then the fourth one, he did officially take. But look, I think this is a worthy holder of this record, and I'd be happy enough if this was the way things stayed. And Mbappe has already banged in so many goals throughout the previous two competitions that he's tournaments he's played in. But the thing is, Mbappe, if he breaks it even in the next competition, it's going to get broken again by somebody who has played in the 48 team tournament for their entire career. It does soften the statistics.
Gerd Muller scored 13 in two World Cups. You know,
I was just looking of the people who were thereabouts was interesting. I think Messi's the only one who doesn't seem to have been a top scorer in any particular tournament, which is an interesting testament to it. There's only a little wrinkle in it, but you have Mbappe has, Gerd Muller obviously has, Thomas Muller, Klose, Ronaldo, they've all had a big jump of it, whereas I suppose his is across a different sort of consistency. Because he's played like, what was the thing there? Like, is this 28th game or
28th? 28th game, yeah.
Mm. And you had like, so he's two ahead of Ronaldo, who played, I think, 19.
19, exactly.
You know, so there's, yeah, he'll get a good long.
Well, he's fuming now, isn't he? I'd say he's sitting there in his hotel room going,
well, the real Ronaldo we're talking about here.
Oh, sorry.
The other one's too close to it. He didn't seem to be near it.
So, yeah, the real Ronaldo is 15 in
19,
which is just an outrageous record. Yeah. Like, Pele with 12 and 14. Like, those for me are like, that's like the gold standard when it comes to goal scoring output. That's something that even Messi can't reach. But then if you start going down that path, then it takes you to like a ridiculous level of who the best goal scorers are in World Cups. Because then you're looking at Sander Coxix for Hungary in 1954, who had 2.5 goals per game.
Jules Rimet?
Jules Fontaine, 13 and 6 in 1958.
French administrator.
Yeah. Still gleaming.
But he could probably kick balls better than Gianni Infantino, I'll tell you that much.
So the boys of the 1950s are safe, it's fair to say, still, until somebody comes along and rips up their insane records. But then I guess you can go back to their era and say there was maybe a lack of depth in terms of the World Cup opponents they were up against in those competitions. And now we've gone full circle to the point where it's the same case. So actually, when you talk about original Ronaldo, maybe that's the toughest task in terms of the number of games you're playing and the quality of global football.
Isn't it funny though? Because I was only saying to somebody before the World Cup started, I was kind of thinking, because, you know, in the build-up to all the previous World Cups, you're always looking at who's going to be the top goal scorer. And I always kind of felt late 90s, early 2000s, we were in a bit of a golden age there. When you think about Ronaldo, you had the likes of Batistuta playing for Argentina, Dennis Bergkamp, the Dutch, Alan Shearer, Michael Owen playing for England. You go on and on and on. Gianluca Vialli for, you know, some great strikes, great strikers playing. And you kind of felt going into this World Cup, geez, we're kind of really kind of starved of top quality proper centre forwards, and yet here we are. Like, there's a couple of players who are already off to a barnstorming beginning at the World Cup. The likes of Mbappe, Haaland, Messi,
Dennis Undav.
Dennis Undav, like, who's been, yeah, he could be like this tournament's Scalacci
or closer. Another man to be lambasted by Stephen Doyle in 20 years' time.
Me and Jurgen Klopp. I'm surprised by how we are being entertained by these centre forwards or strikers.
Yeah,
goal scorers.
It's something that regrettably has kind of entered my thinking, sort of how we analyse these statistics over the course of the weekend as well. Even when watching the Gaelic football, because David Clifford, did he break Dean Rock's record, or he came total?
I think yes.
He's going to do it this weekend, one way or the other. I think he did at the end of proceedings on Saturday. And while that's fantastic, and he would be a deserving holder of any scoring record in Gaelic football, however much he ends up scoring, I mean, it does feel that there is like an asterisk that comes with every single person who plays Gaelic football today, given the amount of two-pointers that these people invariably score. Like, there's a touch of that with Messi being the person who scored the most penalties ever, or who has taken the most penalties, I should say, ever in the World Cup, given it's easier to win a penalty now than it was 40, 50 years ago. But I don't know, like, is that just a miserable existence to be considering this all the time when these statistical moments happen?
I know what you mean. There's no way to weight it, really.
Mm.
You're not, it's going to be impossible. It'll just become so messy. But you, with a Y.
Well done,
with a Y. I'm talking specifically about Gaelic football. But like the same thing, and I think it's just one of those things that those things will just become less important, I think. But like the scoring one in GA in general is quite funny. But
it's pretty stark, yeah.
Yeah, I just think it'll become less important because it is, or you know.
But how did you reflect on, you know, Horgan and Reid going toe-to-toe over the last number of years when the amount of games in hurling just ballooned because those guys started playing round robin? Is that tainted at all? Not tainted is the wrong way to describe this, but do you have an asterisk in your head when you're talking about those scoring records, of those two in particular?
No, I don't care. I don't care because the game's changed so much. Like, there was a great actual detail in Dennis Walsh's Irish Times column today about the change in nature of hurling. And he talked about the 1973 All-Ireland final where I think Richie Bennis hits a 65. It was better to win it or whatever. He hit a 65 successfully and he was score a point. It was the only one hit in that year's championship.
No way.
It's like, so if you think of it now, like 65 is almost a point. Mm. It's almost a guarantee. Not to mention all the frees the two boys are taking. Like, it doesn't diminish what they're doing. But like, that's just so starkly different that I just don't think they make any sense. There's no, you may as well be comparing playing this Limerick team against the 73. Like, what difference? It's so far apart that it's just kind of hard to make any sense of it.
Patrick's been in touch on WhatsApp to say another great result for Cape Verde. Absolute legends. I dare say the Uruguayan side of things is going to come into focus with Tim Vickery a little later because they certainly played their part in a potential giant killing last night. I mean, that first goal will go down in Cape Verde fame forever. It'll never be forgotten, but it'll also go down in World Cup infamy as probably the worst piece of defending to a set piece we've ever seen.
Yeah, it was shocking. there was part of that, but I was in a WhatsApp group of friends discussing it, and I was like, well, you know, were the Uruguay players really expecting them to whack it from that distance?
Get in the eyes.
It was almost like kind of Szoboszlai territory, kind of thinking, he's not really going to hit this one, is he? And then I was like, he's actually done it. It's like too late to react. But like, what a night. It was really fantastic. I got to admit, I'm struggling. Like, I think I said in the build-up to this World Cup, you know, I've got a three-year-old at home, so it's, you're up at 7 o'clock every morning, so it's impossible to watch the late night, early morning kickoffs. But I find I'm even struggling with the 11 o'clock kickoffs. Right. You're kind of like, kickoff, the second half is underway, you're kind of, the old eyes are kind of heavy there, and you're kind of nodding a bit, you know, I'm kind of, do you wake up? Match still on. Oh, yeah. So,
the key is to have a newborn struggling at this stage, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. That's the way to do it. Because you can get in, kind of get your couple of hours nap during the afternoon. But it's kind of frustrating a bit. Hopefully, now we get to the knockout stage, we'll have a few more kind of normal kickoff kind of times and all that. But I thought Cape Verde were fully deserving of the 2-2. It was just so frustrating. The first equaliser that they conceded, and it was just they weren't ready for the amount of Uruguayan players that came into the box at the one time, and if they just hadn't conceded that one, you kind of felt maybe they could get to 90 minutes with the victory. But brilliant performance for them, and it'll be amazing to see them go through the knockout stage for them and Lopez.
Dan Healy has been in touch on YouTube to say, lads, I live in the States and I heard Craig Burley on CBS giving a big shout out to Pico this morning. He said he leads by example and he's vocal. He is their spiritual leader. There is something quite amazing about hearing all the international commentators just commentating on Pico Lopez at a World Cup. It's a very It's a very simple thing. And he's just existing in that space effortlessly. And yeah, I mean, a lot was said last week about Cape Verde after their great draw in the first round of fixtures. So yeah, I'm sure there'll be plenty more over the coming days as well on Roberto Lopez and his teammates after another brilliant result for them last night. Steve, we should get into the newsroom. Where do you want to actually start?
Yeah, we'll start with the World Cup poem because it is 1-0 to Argentina with 54 minutes on the clock. The greatest footballer of all time, Lionel Messi, went from villain to hero in the first half. The number 10's stuttered run for a 9th-minute penalty saw him kick wide, but he did make amends. A lovely first-touch finish from 10 yards out in the 38th minute is what separates the sides. And Nahuel Molina replacing the injured right-back Gonzalo Montiel, the only change made by Argentine boss Lionel Scaloni. Spurs centre-back Kevin Danza, one of the three new starters in the Austria team, who also got their tournament off to a good start with the 3-1 win against Jordan. So they're still in the mix for the knockout stage. In Group J this evening at 10 o'clock, France will meet Iraq in Philadelphia, while at 1 a.m. the group opponents Norway and Senegal will play in New Jersey.
We have live football here at home tonight as well.
Yes, indeed. Of course, Shamrock Rovers captain Pico Lopez, as you mentioned there, impressing last night at the World Cup with Cape Verde holding Uruguay to a draw. Rovers have been managing okay without him, and tonight go again as Derry City make the long trip from Foyleside. It's all square in the head-to-head so far this season between the two sides, with the home team winning in the previous two matches. A Rovers boss, Stephen Bradley, was speaking to the club's media ahead of this game, and he's not taking the City challenge lightly, despite the fact they are 6th in the table and 18 points behind them.
Yeah, like you said, they've got some of the best players in the country. You look at Michael Duffy, they've got some top players, and we know that. And you have to respect that and be ready for it, regardless of what the league tells you or what form tells you. We've got to be ready for the best area, and we will be.
Yeah, just looking to the Shamrock Rovers team, no real surprises there for them. Derry City, starting with Liam Boyce up front. I think that's his first start since he returned from injury. That game kicks off at 8 o'clock. The other two European competitors from the League of Ireland kick off at Talca Park at 7:45. Shelburne looking to extend their unbeaten run to 9 games against struggling Bohemians, who have lost 3 of their last 4 matches. Shell's boss Joey O'Brien remains confident despite his side dropping points in Friday's draw in Drogheda.
We're not feeling sorry for ourselves. We haven't lost a game in 9, so I think the informed team in the league, maybe still, and we'll see what the table is looking at. But 9 games unbeaten in this league is really good going, and we've showed character in them games and quality, and we'll need that for Monday night.
We will, of course, be keeping up to speed on everything that happens in the live football tonight. The thing that, you know, we sometimes forget when we talk about Lionel Messi in this current context around Argentina is that, you know, Argentina are in a competitive battle here, and there is nothing certain about this at the moment. They're 1-0 up still after 55 minutes, and Marcel Sabitzer has just forced Emi Martinez into a brilliant save from a free kick. And the momentum in this game and the control in this game is shifting ever so slightly. So it's Argentina 1, Austria 0, but this game is not done yet. Steve-O, on to Gaelic games. Really, really good quarterfinal draw.
Yes, the GAA confirmed the times, dates and broadcast details for the last 8 matches this weekend. This afternoon, after the morning draw, defending champions Kerry and Tyrone will throw in at 6:15 on Saturday evening after the meeting of Cork and Mayo at 4 o'clock. Those two matches at Croke Park will only be available to watch on GAA+. Louth and Monaghan then will meet at GAA HQ on Sunday at 1:45 before the meeting of Dublin and Galway at 4 o'clock. Those two matches will be shown on RTE. Speaking after his Dublin team knocked out Donegal, Ger Brennan, the manager of the Dubs, admitted that anything can happen.
Well, in any group, it's and where you put a plan in place, you prepare as best you can, and you come out the right side of the result, I suppose, is validation in the way in which we are preparing, and you do take confidence from that. But there's nothing certain in this competition with the new rules, and some of the results have been crazy. Even watching the Armagh-Kerry game last night, like, Armagh probably should have been up a few points, but they end up going in by 6, and what happened the second half happened. So the new rules are keeping everyone guessing, to be honest with you.
Steve, I'll take your victory lap here. We were discussing this earlier as to when was the last time Dublin had such an unexpected victory. Like, do you have to go back to the 2011 All-Ireland final? Because every game for the last 15 years, basically, they've been favourites.
Yeah, I think that's. I think you're right. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Our status, sorry, as a football county has been reinstated from the Leinster county, or sorry, Hurling county status, which was being held for the last couple of months, because the Girls in Blue and the Boys in Blue, of course, successful at the weekend. So we are all in on the football bandwagon now.
Not as big a shock, granted, maybe. But the thing about the 23 final.
Not as big a shock, I'd say, yeah. Mm.
The reign in All-Ireland champions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It wasn't like it's...
Dublin laboured against Monaghan.
Yeah.
Bit in that All-Ireland quarter-final.
I think you're right. I think at that point it wasn't... They were so laden with winners, you're like, it's probably not
that
as much.
That did come to mind as well, yeah.
Okay.
I'm wondering, what's the neutral view? Because, like, I couldn't... It was Father's Day and a rare Sunday off. Had to be with the child and partner, you know, so I was like, so I didn't mean it like that, do you know what I mean? It's like, so couldn't go to the match or I'd be skull-hulled, as my dad would have said back in the day. Listen, I thought the second half and extra time, I thought Dublin were brilliant. I thought it really highlighted the fact that Ger Brennan was missing for the early stage of the championship had a massive impact.
It must have done.
On how Dublin played, because I spoke to friends who could hear him shouting instructions from the line yesterday. He said it did seem he was having a huge influence, and I think his halftime talk, his extra time talks really had a big impact in the game. And there was a number of outstanding performances yesterday. I thought Niall Scully ran the show. I thought at the back there was a couple of, the scramble defence from Dublin was really, really good. Colin Baskell, excellent game for Dublin as well. And then you had young Sean Guyton coming off the bench, had a huge impact. But I just wonder how much of it really was, did Donegal, were their legs gone? Or was it a fact of, Jim McGuinness being out-tacticked by his opposite number?
Quite possibly. And there's a real case to be made that Donegal's energy after the last couple of months maybe is something that just drops given the way they play football. It's something that Paddy Andrews pointed to with Tommy in his post-match chat yesterday. Just on the weekend in general, it does feel like, I mean, you could, it's not something that you'd automatically circle in the sporting calendar anyway, but All-Ireland Hurling quarter-final weekend just really fades into the background. I know the football is sensational at the moment and it tends to get centre stage, but really interesting. I was looking through the attendances of all the big games that took place in men's sport over the course of the last few days in Ireland. And between the rugby, the football and the hurling, there were 7 big games. And in ascending order, the attendances at those games are as follows. So in 7th place, in last place, was the All-Ireland Hurling quarterfinal between Clare and Dublin, 13,279 in Thurles on Saturday. In 6th is Mayo Meath, 15,627 in Castlebar. In 5th, Monaghan West Meath, 21,600 in Clonus. In 4th is Kerry Armagh, 24,648. In 3rd place, Dublin versus Donegal with 32,220 in Croke Park yesterday. In 2nd place is the URC final with 39,184 Croke Park on Friday night. And in 1st place, All-Ireland Hurling quarter final, Cork versus Offaly, 40,185 in Thurles on Sunday. It doesn't feel like a big story at all this weekend in a hurling context. And yet the most attended sporting event in the country over the course of the weekend was an All-Ireland Hurling quarter-final.
Yeah, yeah. It's more a phenomenon of the team involved, isn't it? They're on a journey with them. They're kind of, it's amazing level of support. Like,
and it was on TV.
And it was on, yeah, exactly, yeah.
Well, some of it.
Yes. Most of it was on TV. And it was like, not to be disparaging or whatever else, but like, you'd make a fair case it was a foregone conclusion beforehand. Like, you'd think so, and it did go that way. I do wonder if that's more a Cork thing, because obviously I'm sure from Hurling's point of view you'd probably rather be 3 and 4 in that list than 1 and 7. It's like 1 and 7 is like, yeah, is anyone else, no more than the level of the teams, like, is anyone else going to come up to that Cork level? Or if by some situation they don't win this year's All-Ireland, like, when does that start dropping off again? Because 13,000 definitely feels more reflective of the games in large. Yeah. Cork, I think, are more an outlier than a sign of Hurling's rude health.
That's probably a...
And Offaly, sorry, it was a huge day for Offaly, obviously. Yeah. Massive day for Offaly, so that drove it out. But like,
it's a bit of a red flag, isn't it?
Like, yeah, big time.
That small attendance in that game. Steve-O, we're nearly out of time. We are going to have Matt Williams with us after the break to put a bit of context on the Leo Cullen news, but give us the details here. What's been announced today?
Yeah, the province confirmed Cullen will leave when his current contract expires. That means he'll remain in charge until June of 2027 on. The head coach will have served in a coaching capacity for 12 years by the time he leaves. So far, he's led the Blues to 7 trophy wins, including Friday night's United Rugby Championship success at Croke Park. And also, Stuart McCloskey penning a 1-year contract extension with Ulster Rugby today. That'll keep him at the province until at least 2028.
Stephen Doyle, thank you very much for tonight's news round. We'll be catching up with Arthur as well later in the show. He'll be back with us from 9 o'clock on the football show. The news round has been brought to you by Viagra Connect 50 milligram film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 ml tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation. Time for the cash machine.
The news round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50 milligram film coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.